Welcome to Michelle Speaks. I am your host, Michelle Lawrence. It's the middle of the day, in the middle of the week, but you've tuned into the right show to get you over the hump. We will have riveting conversations about what I call the four W's: worth, wellness, wisdom, and wealth. So let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in his sight. Good afternoon, 860 AM listeners. This is your host, Michelle Lawrence. I am so excited to have another hour with you this week discussing one of the four W's: worth, wellness, wisdom, and wealth. But we're going to get this show started like we do with every show, and that is with scripture. And this week's scripture comes from Ephesians, the fourth chapter, the first through the sixth verse. As a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called: one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. I've just read for you Ephesians, the fourth chapter, the first through the sixth verse. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading and hearing of his word. Each time I read this passage, I gain a better understanding of how to walk in my calling. Sometimes it takes us a while to get clear on what God has called us to do and what he needs us to do in his grand plan. When we often get clarity on what we need to do, we sometimes stumble and fall with how to get it done. Living worthy of the calling means exuding love in the presence of hate. It's walking in faith in the face of fear. It's choosing joy instead of sorrow. It's demonstrating gratitude when others are giving you nothing but attitude. It's committing to stepping outside of our own expectations and the standards that the world has set for us, and to embrace that we need to be a reflection of the Father who has called us. This requires us to move past envy, jealousy, fear, insecurity, and to embrace the things that are of him, which are peace, joy, and harmony. These are things that will bring us closer to him and make us more worthy of the calling. Peace is the bond that allows us to move on with one accord, accomplishing that which he has assigned to each of us collectively. We are, however, a part of one body, and that's the body of Christ. Our calling may not be easy, but trust me, it's worth it. And speaking of calling and speaking of love, we're going to take it back today with a classic gospel by Lionel Richie, Jesus is Love.
Jesus is love. He won't let you down. And I know he's mine forever. Ah, in my heart, we've got to walk on. Walk on through temptation, 'cause he
just heard the classic Jesus is Love by none other than Lionel Richie. And when I was listening to that song, I kept trying to figure out, well, where do you cut this off? And as I kept playing the song, I said, well, you can't cut it off because everybody is now waiting for, you know, this part of the song. But every time I think about that song, it just makes me know and reinforces the message behind love, which also touches back to the scripture that we read. We are one body in Christ, and embracing and walking in the calling that he's called us to. We can only do that through love and his abundant agape love. And so today's show, I am so excited because we're talking about walking in the calling. And so to talk about walking in the calling, and in particular, the calling to serve. And so I have several listeners that oftentimes say to me, Michelle, you don't ever have enough men on the show. And so for those of you who are listening, who are cheering right now for today's show, we are celebrating Men of Honor. Yesterday was Independence. We celebrated 242 years of our country being free. And I am excited for that because we would not have those liberties if it weren't for men like my guest today, none other than Major Ken Roberts, who has served our country for 30 years in multiple capacities in the Army. And I'm going to let him tell more about that story. Now, you've heard him on the show before, but we're going to take it from a slightly different angle today and work through that journey a little bit more. He is my friend. He is my brother. But more importantly, I respect and appreciate what he has done to serve our country. And so welcome back,
Kim. Michelle Lawrence, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And so to know that you had to serve our country and then simultaneously also serve in different capacities, from human resources in the corporate world to philanthropy in the corporate world to currently serving as the commandant at the Philadelphia Military Academy, and still, you know, at one point heeding the call of your uncle, as you used to tell me, my uncle is calling me, I have to go. And I wasn't a fan of his uncle or mine at some time. one point, but heeding to the call to serve. And so you made mention of that in the previous show as to what got you into the Army and to serving. Share more about that decision and the learnings and the journey in the Army and serving and protecting our country.
Yeah, so certainly that's a very broad question, and it gets you through a lot of different things. And when we talk about my uncle, I'm talking about Uncle Sam, and it's kind of a broad, way to capture that. But it was clear to me early on in my life that the service in some capacity would be an important thing. I had a chance to go to Catholic school, and so church and school kind of folded into each other. Mm-hmm. I was raised by a God-fearing woman, and who, you know, that just understanding what service was, to serve others, to be there, to provide, was just a part of my own kind of DNA. And so it just kind of folded into some other opportunities. So I went to Catholic school. We wore a uniform. My friends at that time in public school didn't have to wear a uniform. Mm. You know, it was like you could wear whatever you like. And what really kind of caught my eye was a program when I was 12 years old called the Civil Air Patrol. Mm. And the Civil Air Patrol is the auxiliary of the United States Air Force, actually. But it was during that time period that I really was able to get exposure to a lot of different things about the military, about leadership, about working together in a team, learning how to communicate in front of large groups, mm-hmm. Teaching people. So all of these skills that, you know, are transferable into any environment, I learned at a very early age, and the Civil Air Patrol was really where it started for me in wearing the military uniform and understanding, you know, that there is a higher calling to serve others on a day-to-day basis. The Civil Air Patrol is really a search and rescue emergency services organization, and I was very involved in that through my high school days.
A search and rescue, the Civil Air Patrol. I don't think I've ever heard of the Civil Air Patrol. Is it something that's still around now?
Yes, it is. And so it's a program that works with young people ages 12 through 18 that exposes them to aerospace education, STEM programs.
Okay.
And it's really... plays an important role in the United States Air Force in doing some of the education and search and rescue pieces that is part of the Air Force mission. And so it really was during that time, and the adults that got involved in that program, the mm-hmm. volunteer program, got involved in that, taught me so many different things that it really kind of help frame the pathway that I would go. So it really kind of set off set me off into a certain kind of trajectory.
So you've been in uniform since 12, of some sort. a Catholic uniform. You had a uniform. So you've been in uniform for a very long time.
I have, since I was 12 years old. But you know, the exciting part about that, Michelle, is that I understood that the uniform had a whole kind of representation all by itself.
Mm, say more about that.
You know, I was a very little, short kid, skinny.
Wow.
Yeah, to your audience there, I was really the ugly duckling guy. You know, that real kind
of. So the Captain Winter.
The
Captain America beginning kind of look.
Exactly right.
Before the transformation.
You know, before nobody would, expect anything to happen or a major to come out of this person. And yet, the uniform helped give me that confidence.
Mm.
And the uniform, I respected the uniform in such a way that it allowed me to gain the confidence that I would ultimately have while getting the confidence because mm-hmm. people saw the uniform and respected it already.
Mm.
And so, you know, that has played out, that kind of dual respect has played out throughout my entire life, particularly when I did join the military, that, you know, the American people had such a strong respect for the uniform, and, you know, we learned lessons that we took for granted, I think, during the Vietnam era, so that when we actually sent soldiers this time to be deployed overseas, when they came back, we really treated them with honor and respect. So I benefit from all of those soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines who wore the uniform before I did, who had to withstand some of the scrutiny and the pains of wearing a uniform at a time when it wasn't so popular.
Yeah, I was looking at something similar to that yesterday as they were showing, depending on when you returned. And I had a grandfather that served that used to tell me stories of, you know, it meant something to put it on and go, but it didn't have that quite that same impact coming back home.
Yes.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, but we're not going to get there just yet. We're not going to get there just yet. I do want to talk about being deployed. And I know that you have been deployed multiple times and in defending and serving our country. What do you do to prepare for that deployment personally? And then what do you do to prepare others?
You know, that's – wow. Okay, so the first thing I think is that you must first learn how to lead yourself. So
yeah.
Is your house in order?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, because when you are getting deployed overseas, you are not the only one that is impacted by that decision.
Yeah.
You know, your family is impacted, and you have to prepare them. And I think that the military today does an amazing job at you know, walking a soldier, sailor, airman, or marine through the correct steps to ensure that their family situation is well taken care of. And so what's left, of course, after you do the more tactical things, what's left is the emotional part, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to think. I've been deployed three times. I went to Iraq twice, went to Afghanistan once. And, you know, and each time, you know, you have that conversation with your children, you have your conversation with your significant other, and you want to make sure that they are safe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't even prepare for all the contingencies, but
right.
you try to, you know, make sure that, you know, everyone is in a strong place. But, you know, I think that each group, has a different need.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to tell you that recently I came back from Walt Disney.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I went to Disney, and this was a request of my son from the first time I was deployed.
Wow. Yeah.
This was the first thing from my first deployment. You know, I said to him, I will, when I come back, we'll go to Disney. And when I came back, I couldn't be in front of large crowds.
Right, right.
You know, and that was very difficult for me. And so it wasn't until now, literally 10 years later, was I able to, you know, fulfill that promise with him. So preparing, I think, for those deployments, it really is very emotional. And I think that, you know, many of your listeners and many Americans at this point know someone or has a family member who has been deployed
mm-hmm.
In some way. And, you know, you know, getting ready for that is emotionally draining, but you need to do it. And I think the services help to provide some of those more tangible things. But emotionally, that's where you're at. You got to be ready for that.
And to see that you have fulfilled that and to have watched all of the postings and to see, and he probably will have a better remembrance of it today than he would have then anyway. But I do know that even as you and I had conversations, because I came in a little later adopting you as a big brother. And I remember having the conversation, and mentally I understood the calling. I understood that you had made a decision to serve our country, and I couldn't have been more proud. But I did have that moment where I was just like, look, Uncle Sam. Okay, I thought, you know, that his time was up. And so as I'm doing that and listening to that, I said, there are so many listeners who may not understand what it means to send you off, meaning you, the person that's enrolled, that's serving our country, with comfort and confidence. Yes. And so it was heeding the commitment. You had a list of, you know, you have to write and, you know, some things that were important to get through, as you would describe, the rock pillow or the sandy bed or some of those things. And so how do those things help during the journey? The things that our military men and women are saying, you know, this is what I need. I think it gets taken for granted, or sometimes it's taken lightly when it's like, well, send me cookies or, you know, my favorite this. Or how important are those things to you as the person serving the country?
So as you prepare to leave, right? So that's the deployment part. That's the kind of getting ready, and you got your checklist, and you're making sure that you have your will, and you make sure you have a power of attorney, and you talk to your children, your family, and then you go. When you get there, there are other needs, right? The thing that kept me grounded was to remember that I played more roles than I need to do right now. And what I mean by that is that when I was deployed, I was a soldier.
Yes.
And doing the job of being a soldier was all that I could focus on at that time. But in doing that, you lose an element of your humanity.
Yeah.
Because you're not just a soldier.
Right.
You're a brother, you're a father, you're an uncle, you're a teacher, you're a friend. I mean, all these other roles that don't get a chance to be fully engaged, you start to lose that element until you get mail.
Yeah.
Until you get that picture. Until someone sends you some kind of message in some shape, form, or fashion that, hey, I still remember you.
Yeah.
You still are important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And pictures and letters that we would receive from school children, from from wherever. You got something that said, hey, somebody took the time to think about you for that moment. And for that moment, you were reconnecting with all the roles, all the components of your makeup, so that you can remember that you are human.
Yeah. And missed, right? So not just that you're over there defending, but they're, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth it. There are people back home who are saying, I was thinking of you, and knowing that you are serving, here's what we did, just even almost like a diary.
I'll tell you what, Michelle, now, for me, I, as you well know, I wrote.
Yes.
Right. And so I had, I don't know, it didn't start at this large, but it ended up probably being about, 80, 90 people that I, would write about what I was experiencing while I was overseas.
Yeah.
And so of all those 80, 90 people, at any one time, 25, 30 of them would write me back.
Yeah.
And then I would write them back. So I constantly had a dialogue with someone about something that kind of kept me focused and kept me grounded and kept me, engaged in my humanity that, you know, allowed for me not to get lost,
mm-hmm.
in that whole role.
Well, and then you had folks like your sister who would go, yeah, I know, write you, but I'm going to pick up the phone.
And then there were people who were not as disciplined, because writing requires a level of discipline to do it.
But I needed to hear your
voice. You had to call, when you're trying to call overseas and
that's
you got
right.
a line, you're like, okay, let's hope
it goes through.
Let's hope it goes through. That's right.
But all those things played a valuable role. And as I am engaging, I have you, I have uncles, I have cousins, I have friends, all in different armed forces, and they all say it's the same thing. It's not just the leaving, it's when you get there and remembering you've got to stay present because you're a soldier. Mm-hmm. And so you can't afford to be distracted. But in those moments, normally he says when, at the end of the day and, it's almost time for lights out, and then it's when you're reading or you're remembering or you've read the same letter five times or something along those lines. And so now
I shared that letter with somebody else, just if you didn't get one, wow, okay, what's going on? What's happening?
Yeah. And so how did you know that you would want to continue to serve? I mean, to get the 30 years, right? That is not a drop in the bucket. You could have did your 4 and been done, or your 8 and been done, or your 20 and been done. What kept you connected to continuing to serve our and protect?
There are probably three reasons why that is the case. Mm-hmm. The first one is that looking back, 30 years don't seem as long as when you're going through it.
Mm.
So one day, you're in that routine, you're doing the things, you're being exposed to things, you're enjoying what it is you're doing, and then next thing you know, you're hitting milestones and not even really doing it. So that's how I know that I was doing something that was really connected to my personal mission statement, which was to serve. Because it was like I wasn't, that it was part of what I was, who I am and what I do. So it wasn't work. It was something that I enjoyed. So the second thing is that the military provided me opportunities that didn't always exist at the same time in my civilian career.
Mm.
So there were, the military is designed to have you grow. And as you grow, then you move from leading yourself in the early ranks of the military to leading others,
right,
that you get to the other ranks, to actually then developing policies and procedures and that impact even a greater number of people. So as you kind of go through those steps, one of the things that was helpful to me is that I may be in charge of a company, 200 people, where my civilian job, I hadn't quite reached that level of confidence and development for that employer. But this experience over here prepared me then for the civilian side over
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I did get to that level, I was able to leverage what I learned from my military experience to then also then apply it as appropriate on the civilians on the civilian side. And then I think the final thing really is that I'm just a firm believer that everyone in some shape, form, or fashion should commit to some higher calling. There's more than just yourself. There's no way. We are we're social beings, and we live in communities, and we need each other. It's just a very lonely place if you think you can do it all by yourself. And so, at a certain point, we have to give.
Mm.
We have to share. We have to recognize that there's a greater good than just my own individual interests. And I think those were probably the three things that I've gained from that.
Well, if that doesn't tie back to walking worthy of the calling, right? When you know that you have been designed for a particular purpose, and then to see that purpose played out, most would consider it a high risk. You know, you're in the military, that's like being a fireman, a cop, you know, and very few are going, yes, sign me up, I can't wait. But to do it and to do it willingly and for the sacrifice is why we are pausing right here today to say thank you. And to all of the listeners that have folks who have served and continue to serve our country and who do it for those reasons, for service, for opportunity, and the heed to a higher calling. There is more coming on Michelle Speaks. Stay tuned and stay plugged in as we listen to Major Ken Roberts share more about the journey from the Army to Philadelphia Military Academy. Who knew? Who knew? But he talked briefly about how some of these things were transferable. Stay tuned as we honor our men. Be all they can be. This is Michelle Speaks on 860 AM.
This Wednesday, 1 p.m., drop everything that you're doing and tune in right here, the heart of the city, with me, Malik Boyd. This is a no-holds-barred show. Real issues, real discussions, real solutions. And with some great guests, hot topics, and some surprises mixed in, I promise you this will be a show you don't want to miss. The Heart of the City with me, Malik Boyd, Wednesday, 1 p.m., right here on 860.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be. Weinerman Pain and Wellness, on the web at WeinermanPainandWellness.com.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today. Today's broadcast is brought to you by the Philly Labor RX Injured Workers Pharmacy Network, featuring PPC Pharmacy, First Choice Pharmacy, and Precision Scripts, providing injured workers with premium products and services from the point of injury through the entire healing process. The Philly Labor RX Pharmacy Network cares about injured workers.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Are you thinking about getting your GED diploma? Well, here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a number of pep talks that can motivate you.
Sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to.
You know that feeling? People look at you and don't believe in you.
You want some gentle encouragement.
Then you're on your way to your GED diploma and a better life.
But I know they're probably just a little bit nervous.
You can find it in yourself to take that first step.
You can improve your future.
You can do this. I know you can.
You need to start pushing yourself.
Now get your game face on and take the first step towards a better life. Hurry up. Don't make me repeat myself.
Whatever level of motivation you need to get your GED diploma, we've got a pep talk that's right for you. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org for your pep talk and find free GED classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Michelle Speaks. We are still having great conversations with Major Ken Roberts and celebrating our men of honor who have served our country and women, but who have served our country. Regardless of the arm that you are in, we are here to say thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for heeding the call to serve and to protect our country. We're going to jump right back in. As Ken and I, during the break, we were having some conversations just discussing the transition. What do you do to prepare to go? What is needed while you're there? And we started having some conversations about what does it mean and what needs to be prepared on our end, meaning the family, as you transition back. So you've been deployed and you're coming home. What is that state of the person that's gone, that's coming home, that has just served our country, Ken? What do you need as you're coming back home?
Yeah, you know, I think that when you're coming back, there's an excitement, mm-hmm. and everyone is experiencing it, right? So there's an excitement around the family. There's excitement around the soldier, mm-hmm. Sailor, airman, or marine coming back. But I'm not always sure that each are prepared for that return.
Mm.
And I think when my first deployment, I was like running, like you know I got to get out of uniform. You know,
right.
I got sand in every crevices of my body. I got to power wash all this dirt off me. I mean, I felt like I just couldn't get clean enough. And as I'm like running home to get home, there are all of these services that are on the periphery of my reentry back into to civilian life. And then there's counselors and there's doctors and there's therapists and all these people on the side saying, hey, won't you stay? Let's check these things out. Make sure that you're good to go. Like, I was like, no, I'm going home.
Right.
I want to be home. I got to get there. Staying with you, talking to you, was going to make me stay longer. I want no parts of you. And I went home. And when you go home, you recognize that 12 months is a long time.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a space that says, I'm running home, but it's not the same place I left. And even if it is, I'm not the same person that left.
I'm not the same person. They're not the same people.
Right.
There's a gap
mm-hmm.
In your memory around what did you see? What did you remember from the last time you interacted with or engaged other people that were really close to you?
Mm-hmm.
They've changed, and you've changed. And that first time, I recognized later, 3-4 months into my return, that there's something missing. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but there was something different. And to be quite honest with you, that's why I volunteered for my second deployment.
Okay, okay.
Because I felt like I left something
out in the sand.
Out there. And I had to go get it. Because right. back. Because it wasn't the same, but I couldn't quite describe it. But I knew I had it before I left.
Mm.
I got to go get it. In my second deployment, what I recognized as I'm searching for whatever this thing was that it wasn't out there.
Hmm.
It was inside me. I had changed. There were elements of me that had to get developed while I was a soldier on the side of a mountain in Afghanistan to help me cope with my reality. And those things had become real, and I had never been challenged in that way before, and they became very real skills, very real, tangible things that I then learned that I needed for my life. But when I came back to the States, it seemed out of place, those skills. So I needed – it's not the way people remembered me. People didn't remember me that way.
Right.
And so I had to – I needed to sort that out. And so I did need to go to counseling. I didn't need – in my final deployment, when I came back, I said, okay, well, I'm not leaving until everything gets checked. I want to talk to you, and I'm going to talk to you, and I'm going to talk to you until I really got it together. So – I think that the reentry of a service member back into regular civilian life is a process that we don't quite give a lot of credence to as a very important structured thing that ought to occur. I think we give just a little bit too much freedom on whether or not you should do it when really it needs to be. Because I think that there are a number of soldiers that are experiencing, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder and other types of mental trauma that they haven't been able to talk about or explain or be able to get help with, and then it manifests itself differently later on in life, whether those relationships are working or the reentry to a job, you know, all those things, they start to come out. And so if there's anything that I would want to emphasize is that mental health is a very real thing. You know, soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines need to get that kind of help. And that needs help and support from family. So the family is just so critical in the you know, the nucleus of this all.
So what does that support look like from family, Ken? Because, you know, there's some self-awareness that you just described in terms of saying, I self-assessed, I did a second deployment, and then I came back from the third one and said, I'm stopping everywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's when, you know, the military personnel says, I became more self-aware. What does the family need to do to be more supportive and even friends with the reentry from the military life into civilian life?
Wow. It really depends on the individual. Mm-hmm. But you as the service member know that things are different. You got to be able to talk about that.
Okay.
And I think that the military is doing a very admirable job at making mental health an issue that is accepted as something to get help with on. Mm-hmm. You know, before, you know, if you don't want to be viewed as having any kind of mental health issue, you don't want to be viewed as going to the counselor, you don't want to be viewed as going to a therapist, any of that, you know, breaks down the image of this super soldier that you're supposed to be. I think that there's more of a tolerance level now today in the military to get that kind of help, and that I think is a good thing. But the other part of that is that the family members have to be engaged. And when you see your loved one that is still experiencing some things, that you have to point him or her into programs that can help them, and they really have to use the benefits that they have, which include the Veterans Administration benefits, you know, that will give them those services for free. So those services exist. They exist for free. More service members have to take advantage of them.
And so as I'm listening to this, I also keep picking up on the military life versus civilian life. And oftentimes that is dismissed. it's, you know, civilians, and civilians are going, what are you talking about, civilians? You know, we're all human. What do you mean, civilian? But there is some very intentional language used to differentiate the two, and that helps earmark how we embrace that there is a change that has to happen. Because who I am in my military life is not who I am when I'm in HR or I'm the commandant at PMA. And so how do we get our listeners to embrace the significant difference? Not that one is greater than or less than, because I think that that's what gets superimposed, that folks start getting insulted as if, you know, now there's a ranking. But quite frankly, there is a different lifestyle and expectation and execution. So help my listeners understand why it's so important to know the difference between the two and the significance between the significant difference between the two.
You know, Michelle, one of the things that I think that is important to denote is that on the military side, when you are in a forward operating base or you're deployed overseas and you're in there together, you are together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so you know, it's not like, oh yeah, I'll get to that or I'll do that later, or there's something that you know, I'll follow up on when, you know, when it's convenient for me. You know, everything is life or death. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's very real. It's just not a saying. On the civilian side, it's not so much.
Right.
You know, it's not so much. But when I work with on the corporate side, and I'm developing teams, and I'm, you know, you're developing leaders, and you're trying to help people understand, you know, what is the responsibilities of a team member, what's the responsibilities of a team leader, and how you all work together to accomplish a mission or a goal or a task. You know, that sense of urgency, that sense of priority, is a difference maker as it relates to the corporate side. And mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I think corporations benefit from having a group of people who have a sense of urgency. I think corporations benefit from teams that can work together and prioritize things to get a solution done when they're all working together and they all have the same sense of commitment and dedication to it. And that's the kind of things you see on the military side. But it's already baked in on the military side. It's not as evident on the civilian side. So I think that that's where you see that dichotomy of names. Hey, this is the military side or this is the civilian side coming into play.
It is. And so that reentry of understanding, you know, and transitioning from the seriousness of everything being life and death back into, okay, well, everything, every problem that needs to be solved here isn't there, which does cause for a minute to pause and reassess and to adapt and adjust and go, okay. And then more importantly, as we are engaging in conversation, just to remember, you know, where you are in transition and where I am in recognizing that transition, so that our conversations don't become more explosive because we're not talking the same language or meeting in the same place. And so I want our listeners to tune into that, because there's a great deal around answering your calls. So I know folks are going, how does this tie back into, you know, Michelle? Worth and no wisdom and, you know, the message of today. It's a call to heed, right? And we all have a call. We all have a purpose. But there, that purpose also stretches us. It's demanding. It's requiring. It sometimes will cause us to be alone. It can create strain and stress. But he still says to walk worthy. The other piece that you're hearing is that there was a need for fellowship. Christ had a calling. He had a purpose. He had to come. He had to die. Right. But he still surrounded himself with folks who would help, who would heed, who would gird him up, even though there were times he was going to be alone, even though one of the 12, betrayed him and one denied him. He still had to have his sense of family, his sense of camaraderie. And so even as you're being called, what I heard Ken say is, yeah, there are things I had to do mentally to prepare to leave. There are things I had to do while I was there that I needed support of the family and love, which was writing and to read, that, you know, I was still important and had other roles. In your calling, find out what you need for support. Because it will not just challenge you physically, it will challenge you emotionally, and it will challenge you mentally. I'm also very excited because Ken said, and we've been talking about dispelling the myths of the mental healthness, the mental wellness, and getting help. So that transition and coming back and reentry, pause and go get all of the support. So maybe if it's identified as support, go get all of the support that you need so that you can be whole. You can be whole. Kim, what final words would you have for us around serving, walking in the purpose of calling, and 30 years you gave to Uncle Sam?
You know, I don't think that I would have been able to do all the things that I've done, certainly without recognizing that there were people before me who blazed that trail, and I'm just continuing to help blaze that trail. So I stand on the shoulders on the shoulders of giants before me to get to this point. But I want to be real clear, and I want to be real specific about how my faith impacted my ability to do my job. There's you've never heard silence until you are like on the side of a mountain in Afghanistan and there's no lights and there's no noise and the darkness of the sky is only lit by the stars themselves. If you don't get a chance to connect with understanding that there is a supreme being at that point, then there's just nothing that will ever do that. My faith carried me through the most difficult times during my deployments, and my job forced me to go into areas throughout the country in Iraq and in Afghanistan to bring soldiers home. I did things to bring soldiers home at the time where they were the most vulnerable. And so there were always casualties and deaths everywhere that I went because soldiers were coming in, the transition of soldiers coming into a new place and the soldiers leaving, because my role as a transporter and logistics was moving them back and forth from the States into wherever they needed to be in theater. But it was my faith that kept me grounded. And there were chaplains that taught me more about the Bible during that time period, because I was there. I was able to listen. Everything slowed down. And so it kept me real. And when I talk about being human, I'm talking about there's when you understand that there is a force greater than yourself and that you have a need to serve, all these things help you see a bigger picture. And that picture for me is my connected to my faith, connected to my belief in Jesus Christ. And that's what kept me being able to move seamlessly through all of the difficult times that I had.
Well, we're glad that your faith did that. And that it kept you grounded, that it also kept you safe, because with it came some decision making. And so I'm sure that also helped lead and guide and navigate so that you would three times deployed come home all three times. Listeners, I'm going to reread Ephesians one more time and then talk to you about what it means to walk in your calling. This time I'm going to read the King James Version. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that ye walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, even as ye are called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. You just heard Ken Roberts say that it was his faith that brought him safe this far, is what I'll say, and it's faith that will lead him on. When you're walking in your calling, it will require long suffering, but it's also saying to forbear one another in love. And so as you are honoring each other, and I want you today, this is my charge to you today, to reach out to anyone that you know that has served our country and tell them thank you. Tell them thank you for honoring their calling. Thank you for being obedient. Thank you for serving selflessly. Thank you for loving others above yourself that you would. And then just appreciate that there are times where they are still encountering and having moments, especially if they've been deployed. You know, all is not always well. And so you heard earlier in the show, as he said, it took 10 years to get back to a large crowd like that. So just imagine if you are a military personnel and you've had to do some things so that others might live. Let's not take for granted, or let's be more understanding if a no becomes a no, because we don't know what's behind that no. Or if this desire to move forward with whatever activity that is needed by them, that we encourage and support. It never grows old, and they need our help and our love. This has been an exceptional show. I'm so glad I got a chance to honor veterans. I'm so glad I had a chance to speak with Major Ken Roberts, who has served for 30 years. This happens all right here every week on Michelle Speaks. We will speak of love, integrity, wisdom, wealth, wellness, and worth every Wednesday. Thank you for tuning in. We can be reached at MS Speaks Radio on Twitter and Instagram, Michelle Speaks Radio on Facebook. Looking forward to hearing your comments, and share with me, my charge is real, how you have loved on someone who has served our country. Put it on Twitter, hit me on Facebook. Would love to read and correspond with you about that love shared. Till next week, be blessed. Speak to my heart.